Hello and welcome to another weekly episode of the Beer Fridge Podcast, your home of real beer, real breweries, real opinions. On this week's episode, I'm fanboying it out. It's Overtone.
1, 2.
Yes, it's no thinking, drinking. It's your home of real beer, real breweries, real opinions of Beer Fridge Podcast. As always, whenever you listen to this episode, make sure you subscribe, hit that ding-a-ling-a-ling to be notified of all the latest episodes. Someone asked me what the ding-a-ling-a-ling was. It's a notification button. Push the notification button. It's a bell. Ding-a-ling-a-ling. Whack it. You'll be notified of each and every single episode that we publish every single week. You can show support by giving us a 5-star rating. Head to patreon.com/beerfridgepodcast as well. My name is Gavin. I've got my usual drinking buddies in the form of Callum and Mr. MD as well. Good evening, gentlemen.
Hello, hello.
Good evening.
Oh, I'm buzzing for this.
Indeed. Always. Bring him in. James, Mr. James Kidd from Overtone. How are you doing, my man?
Very good, thanks. Very good. How are you?
We're very well. We know we're big fans, and as Gav mentioned, he's Mr. Fanboy number one of Overtone, and it's always a pleasure to talk Overtone beers with you, my man. So, looking forward to it.
Thank you for having us. Always a pleasure.
Anytime, you know, every Tuesday, if you're available, like, it's fine.
I will quite happily have this as a weekly segment.
this segment sponsored by Overtone. We just talk about an Overtone beer. That sounds pretty.
Sounds decent. Like a fucking dream to me.
Sounds all right.
Absolute dream to me. James, if memory serves me right, this is your third appearance on the podcast?
I think so.
I think it's a hat trick appearance. We've not got a soccery hat trick like ball or some shit, but
we gong or something like that. Yeah.
I'll whack in a wee sound effect there. But no, it's good to have you as always in the podcast. We'll do as we normally do, go around the virtual table and see what we're drinking to kick things off. D, you're sipping out of your Stein big vessel there. Are you on brand or are you off?
I'm on brand.
Okay, we go.
I'm on brand. So, I just, when James kind of sent through the three beers that he was kind of looking at, yeah. I looked and I thought, obviously, I'm trying to do one beer podcast these days because, you know, I'm being responsible and all that kind of malarkey for the most part. So, I thought to myself, which of the three beers have I either not tried, or would I like to discuss the most?
Or has the highest percentage?
Oh, no. I think I might have picked the one with the lowest percentage, actually. And I've went with the Floex, the Czech Pilsner. There we are.
There you.
Oh, that was quite a good snap.
Not going to use it though.
I know, that's all right. The for me, like, I, you know, I'm totally like lager and Westy Daft now. It's the two style of beers I want to drink all the time. And right off the nose on this, I'm getting just this really dry, like, kind of, it's got a wee bit of kind of, I don't want to say fruity, but it's got like a very, very Moorish smell to it. You just get, like, it's exactly what I'm looking for. Taste-wise, it hits the notes right away. You can tell by my extremely Czech style pour here that I got a little bit excited, but I know Redeem at Budvar will probably think it's finally I've hit the nail with a pour, so I'll take it. It's flavoursome and no thinking drinking, or at the same time, like, it kind of coats your tongue, it like kind of dances. It's quite champagne-y on the bubbles, if that makes sense. I feel like it's kind of light, like quite lively on that, but it's just really easy drinking so far. I've took two mouthfuls of it, so we'll see how it goes as it kind of warms up. And but so far, it's delicious.
Mr. Muir, I believe you're on the same.
Yes, I'm on the same. And yeah, I totally agree with what Mark's saying. It's pretty much a perfect example of the style, in my opinion. It's really light. It's got an amazing colour. It's like so clear, and I'm getting like bread and almost like hay characteristics on the nose, and that kind of bitterness is almost like an orangey bitterness, which is really, really pleasing. But there's also that kind of spice that I like about a Pilsner. Sometimes, you know, it's a bit more, the flavour's a bit more complex, and it can sometimes, you know, taste a little bit spicy. But yeah, really, really, really enjoying it. And yeah, that's, I mean, as Mark says, no thinking drinking, 4.5%, and it's just super, super easy to drink, and just perfect, mate. It's absolutely perfect. In fact, I'm in the process of going into our 2024 Fridges spreadsheet to put this into the Lager Pilsner category at the moment.
Straight in. That's when you know it's hitting the marks, when it hits the spreadsheet right as the podcast starts. Not after the podcast where you're like four deep. It's like in at the start of the podcast. It's
That's fucking going in.
It's just really like I like what you touched on that. It's got a like a herbiness, like a pepperiness to it, and whether that's intentional or not, but it brings you back for more, and really leans into the Pilsner kind of style, that dry.
I think that goes back to what we spoke about when we had the Demon for Budva. That the Saz is such a complex hop, like you know, it's used almost exclusively in Czech beers. But it's for it being, you know, it's definitely not a one trick pony. There's so many different levels and layers, and it's quite a complex flavour. But yeah, it's lovely.
Sounds good, boys. I am on, I mentioned before we're recording, I will be doing a blog review for the Bruiser guys on their the Overtone Mighty Box, which you can still get access to. And you'll probably see the blog. I should finish it by the end of the week. And what I make sure I do the due diligence and go through all the beers and not rush it and take my time. So one of the beers that I've been kindly sent over is Otto Rock, which is a pale ale sitting at 5%. We've got Strata, Mosaic, and Mosaic Cryo in there. Very light bodied pale, a little bit of passion fruit. There's a nice bit of hoppiness as well through it. I'm getting like a piney, zippy kind of ness in the back of it. I don't want to say bubblegum, but bubblegum kind of weirdly comes in my head. I can't really figure it out that last little bit. But again, going to that point where that thing that we've been saying for the last kind of, three or four months, 5 months maybe, and that new slogan that we're going with is that no thinking drinking. This is a really good pale, which you can do the no thinking drinking, but at the same time, if you want to be a craft beer wank, you can fucking dive into this beer and try and dissect the flavors if that's something you really want to do. But it's just a lovely, again, I mean, they knock it out of the park as they normally do with the marketing and the labels. But yeah, thoroughly, thoroughly enjoying this pale, as I have with the other ones. The Westie, like I said, is it Bookend? But a fucking
Bookhouse Boys, yeah.
Bookhouse Boys, that is one of probably, actually, in fact, it's the best Westie I've had at 5%. The other Westies that I've had that I think have been really, really good have been like really high ABVs, like 8.5 maybe. For a low percentage ABV, that has been, or a lower, I should say, has been fucking one of the best, if not the best, Westies that I've had. Granted, I'll put that with a little caveat of, as you heard at the start, I am a fucking Overtone apologist. So take that as you will. Take that as you will. It's fucking good. I wouldn't suggest you have it if I didn't think it was fucking good. Same with the Otto Rock. Definitely worth picking up as well. James, are you on? Are you on the same as other guys?
No, I poured a Flo-X and it went straight down the throat pretty quickly. So I grabbed a can of the CCBM. Obviously, the festival was on at the weekend, Friday and Saturday, and it's a cracker. The hops are Citra Cryo, Brew One Mosaic, spells CCBM, the Caledonian Craft Brew, and it's great. It's a 6%er. There's a little bit of spice in there, but mostly stone fruits. And again, no thinking drinking. I love that phrase, and it is a pretty easy drinking 6%. I think it's the best 6% we've produced this year. And yeah, solid beer. It's nice to collaborate with Colin up at Caledonian Craft. He runs a good show. His festival's a hit every year, and it's good. We did a beer last year with him called the Big Swally. It was a 8% dipa, I think. So it's something a little bit more smashable this year. But yeah, cracker.
It definitely was. We had it on keg at the festival on Friday night, and it was absolutely delicious. Like you say, stone fruits for days. I got a bit of pineapple in it as well. I had on my notes. Yeah. But yeah, like you say, completely smashable. And the 2/3 that I had disappeared ridiculously quickly.
there's two things there that are standouts for me. One, obviously, the Big Swally is going strength to strength every single year. Callum, yeah. You've been the last 2 years, same yourself, mm-hmm. James. You guys have been the last couple of years as well. And that festival itself is going from strength to strength. The other bit on that I want to pick up on as well, you mentioned about obviously our slogan that we've been going with for the last couple of months is that no thinking, drinking. Is that something for... It's something that we've said to breweries before, that it's a thing, like, it's not an offensive term and such. It's more of bringing out a beer that suits a market or two markets. One of a craft beer wank and someone who wants to get involved in craft beer. And I think you guys do have that good mix in terms of what you guys do. Otto Rock being one of those kind of examples, but then you fucking go tits out with like the other beer I've got sitting beside me, Trickle Down, which looks like a bad boy, which I'm looking forward to. Are those kind of vibes in terms of when you guys have the discussions about what beer you're going to bring out next, like are those discussions that you're having internally as well, making sure there's something accessible to a wider market as well?
I think we tend to break our beers down into categories, and I think that's kind of what you do. You need a kind of balanced release schedule, moving from the easy drinking stuff like the pails and the lagers, right the way through to the bigger, more complex beers like the dippers, tippers, and then sour beers. I think is a thinking man's beer. You know, it's very much appreciate. I don't really think sour beers unless they're like a low ABV. You know, session number. I think that sour beers are definitely more to sit and sip rather than, you know, scoff like a 6%ers and below. We kind of pay quite a lot of attention to what we release and trying to get better at when we release it. There's nothing worse than having like dipper, because it just affects the sell through. You can't just release dippers every week. There needs to be a little bit of scarcity in the market before you release your next dipper, or else quite simply people that are stocking them in bottle shops just won't buy a dipper a week. Certainly not from us. They'll buy a dipper from, you know, somebody else, and then they'll buy one from us. So we need to be a little bit better on when we release the products. But yeah, having a good balance is really kind of a big part of what we're trying to do.
I said that before we recorded, doesn't it? I think it's something that I commend you for, because excuse me, like the emergence of Overtone was because of the IPAs. It was because of the dippers and the weekly, you know, release of, you know, multiple beers and, you know,
2 or 3 at a time.
Well, it was, and it was, you know, hype beer, dipper this, tipper, like you said, but the variety of beers that are coming out at the brewery now, and the quality of the brewery, of the beers, like over just like a multitude of different styles, because, you know, it's all well and good having a brewer that can nail, you know, a complex dipper or a pale or an IPA, whatever it is, but being able to brew a huge range of stuff on a really frequent basis, I think, such a skill. And, you know, the lagers and the pilsners, I think, is a really nice touch. I know the sours, I know you've done some dark beer as well, which has been a hit or a miss, depending on who we've spoken to or who we've tried it. But again, I think that's a testament to the brewery as well. And it's nice to see, like you're saying, James, that, you know, thinking about, you know, you want Overtone beers in the bottle shops all year round. You don't just want them coming every 3 weeks and buying, or every month buying the hype beer, do you?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, with the stouts, I think we made a lot of inroads last year when we started double mashing the stouts. That was like the golden egg, so to speak. But just like, right, okay, how do we make them thicker? I think that the marketplace really wants sweet stouts these days. They want stout with adjuncts, ideally a bit of barrel in there as well. And you try and tick those boxes. I think in our first wee while, I think the stout was a difficult category to conquer.
Yeah,
I think that last year we released three pretty solid stouts for the first time in a while, and our latest release, which is called Obsidian, which is a milk stout at 6.5. I think it's our best stout so far. It's a cracker. It's dead easy to drink. It's sweet, which I think appeals to most stout drinkers these days. I mean, I like bitter stouts, but I think the masses don't. They want a big, thick, sweet, sticky stout that if you spill it on your table,
it's got a sweet tooth. You're right, mate. That's
totally. And I think we've hit the nail on the head with Obsidian. It's an absolute cracker. It's our best. Certainly, if I can refer to 6.5 as a session stout, it's our best session stout so far.
In this podcast, definitely.
I was like, James fits in here perfectly, doesn't he? He's like, you know, like
he knows the level we're at.
6% session, totally. 6.5 still session.
Have you found, James, with that kind of diving more into the stouts and the sours, and this is coming from an Overtone apologist who thinks you guys can do no wrong, and I'll say this with that fan hat on. In terms of the stouts and in terms of the sours, have you found that a difficult break for you guys? Because for me, you guys kill the pails, you guys kill doubles and triples, you guys absolutely smash out of the park with those. But when it comes to, like, and you mentioned you guys with the Obsidian, I've maybe figured out, and I've got one in my fridge at home too. I'm just like fucking 200 miles away from my fucking bridge, unfortunately, tonight, to make sure to back you up on that. But have you found that with the stouts and with the sours, it's maybe been a slightly harder kind of reach to get that through to the buying public of the craft beer scene, that, look, yes, we do fucking doubles and triples on a super high level, but, oh, by the way, we can do sours and stouts as well.
I think sours have been much more difficult because we've spent a lot of time and a lot of money flinging lots of fruit into sours.
Yeah.
We produced two sours at 10% over the last about 18 months, and neither of them resonated because we just put too much shit in them. You know, when you're talking about coffee, maple syrup, four different fruit additions on top of, you know, a 10% base beer, it's mental. And you've got people getting confused when they're drinking it. And I'm not typically a sour drinker. I like the traditional sours, the Belgium stuff, the mixed firm stuff. But I'm not a fruited sour drinker. I don't sit down on a Saturday with my missus and you know, have a can of some sour beer. It just doesn't really float it for me. So I'm a bit naive as to what's involved. You know, I appreciate what Bulk City do from either the Sour Masters and certainly the Smoothie Sour Masters in the UK, and a lot of respect for them. I think sometimes you just can't fling hundreds and hundreds of kilos of fruit and a beer and expect it to work, you know?
No, I agree. Do you find with that then, because so this is my opinion of what you guys have done, not over the last 3 months, I would say before then, when you've maybe done like sours or when you've done maybe darker beers, you've always done it as a collaboration. And it's, I've always found it's maybe been a case of, right, we maybe not lend ourselves to being as good at doing those beers or maybe having the market spread on those beers. So it feels like, okay, if we get someone else involved, then maybe that's going to bring in another target audience, whether it be someone with Vault City or when you look at the dark side of the beers as well, getting those guys in to do a collaboration. Right, okay, maybe we can get some of those customers who've maybe never tried Overtone before, for whatever reason. But if we collaborate with them on a darker beer or a sour beer, like then maybe they'll try one of the dippers or whatever. I know you guys do fucking phenomenally. And to the point where, yeah, anytime I've got Overtone, I am a fucking, it's my birthday next month, I am buying a shit ton of Overtone. The wife went, what do you want for your birthday? I need to say Christmas now. What do you want for your birthday? Like, just buy me a case of Overtone. I don't give a fuck.
I think it's, I think what you're saying, Gav, I think it's quite important, because like James mentioned, like you say, when you're competing with, you know, for tap space and bottle space, it's difficult to oust Vault City and the sour market, let's be honest. You know, it's difficult to oust, you know, Tempest on, you know, the big Imperial dark beers. You know, like if people have drunk, you know, the those particular styles, then you lean to a brewery that way, you know, but you do need to dip your toe in, and by collabing and kind of, you know, trying things, like you say, double mashing, James, I think it's quite important, because, you know, at the end of the day, what you're trying to do is build the whole catalogue, you know, so that when the Overtone tap room is raving and opened up and all the rest of it in city centre of Glasgow and it's jumping every night, you're attracting everybody from a stout drinker, a sour drinker, and the IPA lover. And you obviously had a wee giggle there, because I know the tap room must be right just about there for you now, is it?
Do you know what? If I had a pound marked for every time that I was asked, you know, is there a tap room at the brewery, or when's the tap room opening, or where's the tap room, or you know, whatever those questions are, then I'd have a couple of quid. The unfortunate thing about it is, you know, I control the controllables, and it's one thing that I'm unfortunately not in control. I think if we did open a tap room, it would be wonderful. I think it would be great. But there'd be people coming up from all over the United Kingdom to visit it.
I'll bring my sleeping bag.
but until that point, we just need to kind of crack on with it. Unfortunately, it's unfortunate that we've got a space in Preston, the collaboration with Nico Beers. You know, the gaffer's opened up one in Beijing, which is fabulous. But if you're a beer drinker in Glasgow, which is where we're based, it's where our target market is, then you're a little bit frustrated with me telling you to fucking go to Beijing if you want an Overtone tap room. Do you know what I mean? And I saw the pictures, the gaffer posted them on Instagram the other day. I don't know if you follow my boss boy. And it looks fantastic, but it's in Beijing. Like, I don't know about you lads, but I don't have a couple of grand to go to Beijing to drink Overtone beer. I'd rather drink it here. But like, fair play, fingers crossed.
It looks cool. It looks wicked. It does genuinely look cool as fuck.
And is that beer getting shipped over?
Yeah. The downside of that, it takes, don't get me wrong, it's a chilled reefer, so a chilled container. It takes between 4 and 6 weeks to get there. So it sits at 3 to 5 degrees for 4 to 6 weeks, which isn't ideal. Obviously, the stouts, the sours, and the lagers are fine, but your IPAs, you want to be drinking them fresher than that. But you know, it is what it is. We've got a, my boss has set up a distribution business in China, which is, you know, we're selling a bit of kind of wholesale overtone over there, which again, it's a nice business model to have, and we're hoping that the tap room takes off, and it's only been open a couple of months.
Are you brewing beer specifically for the Chinese market then, or is it just whatever you're brewing, you're just sending a portion over?
Do you know, Cam, we've brewed one beer for the Chinese market. You'll never fucking guess what it is.
What's up? Well, going by, you know, Mark's been in China, and I've spoken to other people, and the Chinese beer market is all like 2.5-3%. You know, I remember Mark telling me that he had you know, almost a party to himself when he managed to find a 4.5% beer to drink. So the idea of the guys in China quaffing down an 8% overtone is a bit alien, but going to put me out of my misery.
Well, I mean, the one thing I'd say before I tell you the style of beer that we made specifically for China, and we've shipped it, it'll get there probably in about a week or two, is that every time the gaffer comes home, he brings back a whole wad of quality American stuff for us to try. And our fridge in the brewery's got some Root and Branch, Monkish, North Park. I think that's it this time. And it's all like within 8 weeks of package date. Sitting in the fridge, I've got a Monkish tipper which I might have while I'm online with you tonight, which he's brought back from China, and it's still expensive, but it's much fresher than what you typically get when you're here. The beer, by the way, is an ESB, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. An extra special bitter brewed to 5.2. And when the gaffer asked us if I wanted any for the local market, I just said no. I was like, if we're going to cask it, yeah, but not to sell. And
you've not got a couple of cans hanging about, have you? Because that's right up.
Didn't can any of it. All went in the keg.
Oh no!
You're an old man, though, Carl.
Oh no! That...
I agree with you to some extent. I wouldn't mind of it. No, but I think kind of. If you're trying to get that and push that into craft beer bottle shops and bars, that might be a tough one. So,
cask overtone would be cool, like with a bitter, but cool, I totally agree. Like the, you know, I think I'm actually now that you've said it, I'm not overly surprised because I know, you know, like bitters and Scotch ales and stuff like that tend to travel really, really well. And when you're abroad, the amount of, you know, 7-8% Scotch ales you find in bottles and bottle shops in Italy, and you know, when I was, you know, it's just weird. But that's like you say, the whole branching out and, you know, export and getting your beers kind of worldwide and just opening up audience. It's one of these. It's a fine line between. And obviously, you've got that connection over there for distribution, so that makes such a difference.
Yeah.
You know, but at the same time, you know, you've got to look after the old Scottish market and get.
Well, we thought about canning some of it. We thought about listing it for a few of our export guys because it's obviously not an expensive beer to make. I mean, when the lads from New Bristol came up, which was a bit of a blast, like fucking hell, they can drink. but when they came up, that's like Noel from there, one of the gaffers, he's just like, just give me more of that ESP. We did a tank tasting with him, and you know, we went through a couple of the hazy bits and bobs, and we're like, do you want to taste the ESP? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, just like, give me a pint of it. So we're pouring it out of the tank, and it was hazy at this point. I don't know. I mean, there's not much hop in it, so something needed to settle out of it anyway. But he was loving it. But if it's not on cask and it's not at cellar temperature, I don't want to drink it as a craft beer. Do you know what I mean? For me, an ESB is a pint beer that you have in a pub on cask, and it, in any other fashion, it's just wrong. And I love a traditional English bitter, I really do, but I don't. Yeah,
You could have whacked someone.
Time and place,
Ebria or something. Anywho,
you were quicker getting paid for the Chinese guys coming over, I think, than Ebria.
Anyway.
Exactly.
No touching that combo again.
Let's leave that combo. Talking about like, see, your place in Preston, collab kind of place with Nico. How is that going down in Preston?
It's not bad. Have you been to Preston?
Been in Preston that 2 years ago. There's a strong chance actually. I'm probably not a fucking ball here away. I'm just quickly doing a quick Google map.
Is it my question? Is there anything actually decent? Is there anything in Preston other than your place?
do you know what, mate? There is. And, now, I was shocked.
Manchester Craft Beer Festival.
Hmm?
The Manchester Craft Beer Festival.
Well,
once a year.
Cran and I went down. In fact, it wasn't Cran, it was one of our staff a while ago, and we went down to do a tap takeover at Nico, and we thought, right, we'll go down, do a bit of prospecting. And there's a bar called Plug and Taps, which is great. Rivi took over the Vaults, which is great. There is, what's the brewery that's based in Preston? I can't remember. There's a cool brewery. There's about five proper decent pubs to have a beer in, and that, like, literally five proper craft pubs. We met Ben from Rivi when we were down there, had a great evening. Sorry,
Chain House,
that's it. Yeah, it sits literally in the same mass of buildings, and they're all really old buildings. So you could go walk around these mad wee alleys between Chain Houses, like back door into the I call them the Rivi Vaults, but I think they're just called the Vaults, and the Rivi took down their downstairs part. And Plug and Taps, there's another place that I can't remember on the where Nico is part of town, but Preston's quite cool. And I say that surprisingly, because I never thought it was. Don't get me wrong, there's guys smoking weed in the streets all the time, which I thought was quite weird, and I love the smell of weed. But Preston's a really cool place, and there's a lot of cool craft beer stuff going on there, and I'd quite happily go back for a
surprisingly boys, not gonna lie, I've narrowed in my search directly into Preston over the Chain House establishment, and just search craft beer, and James is doing wrong, by the way. Vinyl Tap, Nico, as he mentioned, Hopwoods, Guild Ale, Chain House.
Yeah,
I mean, there you go.
Last time it's probably been about 15 years since I've been in Preston, but it was a toilet when I was there. So I'm glad to hear it's on the up.
I think it's like, Cal, it's still a bit of a toilet, but
it's
a craft beer toilet, mate.
Craft beer toilet.
No, it's not. I'm going to stand up and say that I would happily go back to Preston for a drink. I had a beer with Martin from Northern Monk now with Vault City. And we sat down, had a couple of beers and a Plug and Taps, and then went into Nico and had a couple of beers. And I said to him, I was like, I quite like Preston. He's like, really? And so, I was like,
I think, and you guys would have seen it on your comments and stuff on social media, when you guys were like, oh, tap space, everyone probably went, fucking yes, here we fucking go. And then everyone was like, Preston? Fucking Preston? What the fuck? And yes, I know you've already touched on it and you've answered it already, but we would love, absolutely love, for a place to be in Glasgow. And I know you guys are just taking your time to find the right spot, which in fairness is actually the right thing to do. I would hate for you guys just to rush it, because I guarantee you guys have probably seen three or four places where you can go, fuck it, we could date this, we could date here, but long term, does it actually benefit us? Like, maybe not. Like, short term, yes, we get a wee hit, but it's maybe not right for us right now. So I appreciate you guys taking the time to find a place that works. But you've done a couple of tap takeovers and stuff for your birthdays, etc., where you've taken over an area and it's been overtone head to toe from when you walk in the door. And I look forward to the day where there's an overtone establishment where I can get Ouija every day of the week.
It's coming back.
That is exactly what I wanted to hear, James.
Literally two weeks away, I think. Literally 2 weeks, we've got a rebrew Ouija coming alongside. Just might as well just hit with a little bit of beer info. Let me see. Ouija, we've got a beer called Marble Skies, double IPA, Citra Nelson, dead simple, just straight up Citra Nelson. Got a rebrew of Cherry Berry Magic and Crystal Ball.
Pause. Sorry. If you say that to, 65% of the breweries in the country going, yeah, Citra Nelson, just basic, they'd be like, fucking, sorry, what?
I mean, just like, you know, just nothing
this
else,
is,
just straight
this
up.
Is why, this is where, for me, Overtone is there, fucking out of the fucking screen, and other breweries that go, Citra Nelson. I know, fanboy moment, but fuck.
Honestly, we should have a shot every time Gav says fanboy. I think we'll be doing the backstroke to our bed tonight.
I've counted 4 times.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, Citra Nelson Dipper, I think, is like a win. That with Ouija in a couple of weeks, that sounds like a decent birthday box for Gav.
Rudely interrupted James in mid-flow, so carry on. What else have we got coming up?
No, that's all right. We've got Crystal Ball coming back, which is a tipper. I think it's been delayed slightly, so it's probably going to be a while. We've got a new beer at 7% called Dissident, which is using Idaho 7 CGX, which I'm almost as excited about that as I am about Marble Skies, which is the Citra Nelson tipper.
What's the CGX element?
I don't really know. Like the kind of general gist of it is kind of like cryo, I believe. So it's a more concentrated version of hops, and I use that term as an umbrella because there's so many different types. When you look at Incognito, cryo, T90, and then your standard hops, and it seems like every kind of couple of months you've got a new different concentrate. You know, that there's some people that are blending and there's some people that are just producing, like, you know, straight up hop profiles. And then instead of just one hop, if you take the standard hop, you've got the scale of concentrate from hop pellet, T90, Incognito. I believe CGX is, it probably belongs to one of the hop farms because I think they're all trying to call it some. We'll call it this and we'll call it that. Had a nice night out with the lads from Yakima whenever they were down doing Juxtaposed, and they were just like, yeah, there's a lot of hops that come out and people don't like them and they just end up getting lost. Mm-hmm. And it's when they release like a YCH, you know, 561 or 245 or whatever, then if people like it, then that's brilliant, and they'll give it a proper name, like fucking Nelson Sauvignon or, you know, Superdelic or something. People don't like it, then it just gets cross-blended or just fucking dropped and, you know, brought back. It's like the hop game's mental, it's batshit.
You've got to be so careful with these different variants of hops, because I just done a quick bit of Googling there about CGX, and it's basically shorthand for cryogenics. So it's obviously along the same line as your cryo type thing.
Yeah.
But the tiny bit of information that I've got there is that it's basically double dosing T90. So it's like when companies double concentrate their juice or quadruple concentrate their juice, you know, you've surely got to be, you know, so careful and, you know, test with these kinds of things, because, you know, just firing in a fuck ton of these hops not only is going to cost you a fortune, but it might not work.
Yeah.
Well, Cal, while we're on that, while you have it on in front of you, does it tell you which company produces CGX? Because you'd imagine
Crosby Hops, I think it's
Crosby.
It's the website.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Crosby will produce them. Someone else will produce Cryo. Is it Yakima or whatever, which is exactly the same thing. So it's just somebody else's name for a concentrated version of the hop. It's very confusing. Like, don't get me wrong, like, if Dan were on, he'd be able to tell you, you know, what the different concentrate levels are and which increments they go up in. Me, on the other hand, I'm not a brewer, but it's a confusion. It's a very, very confusing place to try and figure out what's best to put in your beer.
Definitely.
All it sounds to me is that there's going to be a shitload of flavour hitting these beers. So at the end of the day, if it's double concentrated, cryoed, incognito, T92, that's why these guys are so skilled, the brewers, you know, as a consumer and as someone that's obviously, I'm the same as you, obviously, when you work with a beer, you need to understand it enough, if someone really asks you, but, you know, being able to say, you know, if you had Robinson single juice or double concentrated juice, it's the same, you know, and the, you need a little bit of this one to give you the same amount of flavour versus that. Because it was the same with T90 versus Leaf back in the day, wasn't it? You know, when you added the Leaf then and you added the T90. So it just sounds like the you'll know better than most, James, that this industry moves so fast. And, you know, when the new hop hits the market and it does land, every brewery in the country is probably going to have the next, you know, Phantasma hopped beer, the Nelson Sauvin, the whatever it is, you know, it's going to be in the beer because it's hip, it's relevant, and, you know, it helps push, makes our job slightly easier when you've got a nice modern hyped hop that you can sell, saying we've got this awesome beer with whatever in it. So it sounds super exciting. And to be honest with you, the Nelson and Citra beer is, like you say, right up my street.
Yeah, can't wait for it. Can't wait for it.
The other thing as well is, correct me if I'm wrong, James, Dan's over in America at the moment.
He is, yeah. He's almost back Thursday, I think, yeah.
He's been sampling some Trillium and some other bits and bobs, so if he's going to be coming back with some of that...
I doubt there'll be any for me, to be honest with you.
Not necessarily Trillium beers, but
I'll just swipe on a Monkeys for the fridge.
Exactly. Just come, if he's coming back with that kind of influence, then the next couple of months should be quite exciting, because Dan is a bit of a magician, a bit of a wizard, and coming up with some fucking fantastic beers. He's out there embossing some, sampling some fucking fantastic beers, which I'm a wee bit jealous.
If you're going anywhere in the States, you know, Boston's probably up there for hitting the New England and IPAs. And I suppose from a Overtone point of view, having your brewer sampling all those flavoured beers is only going to be beneficial the summertime comes, for, you know, when NEPA season jumps into full swing.
Oh, definitely. I hope he's relaxing and having a good time. I'm sure he will be. You know, speaking of which, I'm going to have to get myself a beer, because I'm.
Go and grab yourself another beer, because I have moved on myself onto a beer that's a testament to Overtone through and through. And again, take this as you will from an Overtone fanboy. But
can I just interrupt you, Gab, just for a wee second? I'm really sorry, but just to let everybody behind the curtain, this is a real life podcast. People have real lives, so. I'm going to disappear for 5 minutes because I've got children to put to bed. I'll be back with you in 5 minutes.
That's okay. Put them to bed, and we'll see you in a minute, mate. while he goes and sings some lullabies, I'll sing some lullabies that are going to go into my glass and then down my throat very swiftly, and that's in the form of beer. And that is Overtone's Trickle Down. This is a double dry hopped double IPA.
Double dry hopped double IPA.
Kuhatu, Motu Eka, Nectaron, and Dahiki are the hops. So I'm hoping James appears in a second to clarify that I'm saying those one correctly, and they're actually in the beer, which they are. because it says on the can, 8.2%. This is, for me, it says everything that Overtone is, and they do doubles so well. Like, it gives you that kind of, this is, I can't decide if it's my first, it's my favourite double of the year, or my favourite DDH of the year, or my second favourite DDH. I'll take a wee bit of deciding, I don't know. But Trickle Down is one you should definitely get your hands on, because it just tastes like everything you want that style to be. It hits the mark 120 million percent.
It's quite an interesting hop bill, though. Like you say, Nectaron, what's that, New Zealand, and then Motueka. Yes, so it's got the New Zealand kind of influence as well. And...
so you're getting that, like...
Dyke's New Zealand as well, I think. I think it's we made a beer called Wandering Eye last year. It's a pale ale. I can't remember exactly when we packaged it last summer. This is the same hop bill, but it's 8%. Whereas Wandering Eye, I think, was
a wee bit of dryness. A wee bit of dryness, white wininess to it, but then you get that stone fruit as well, which comes through in abundance. That those kind of tropical vibes that everyone wants in their beers, and it hits everything on the mark in terms of the style. It does, again, it does what we said numerous times, just do what it says in the can in terms of the style, and it hits them like
so. As all dippers. Are not all dippers dry hopped? Because, you know, obviously knowing the style, I'm trying to balance Gavin's fanboyism out a little bit for the honest listener. And when I've made dippers, and I know, like, you know, obviously building the base of the beer in terms of the grain and the malt bill, you know, to get a dipper properly, you know, it's all about the body and all the rest of it. But let's be honest, when you've got the flavor that you're looking at, you know, it still needs to pack a bit of a punch. So I would have assumed, and I know Verdant might have tell me off and tell us wrong in that, because again, their thoughts on dry hopping, but I just would have assumed most dippers would have been dry hopped.
Yeah, all of ours have been. I think depending on the style depends on your hop additions. If you're making a Westie, you've got, you know, more hop in the whirlpool rather than, you know, during our post fermentation. But yeah, all of ours, even our Westies, are hopped during our post. But yeah, the big hop additions come after us, as you'll know.
No, totally. And I think it's important, because, like, putting it on the can, like Gav says, you've got to do what it's our biggest gripe, isn't it? If, you know, you write something on the can and then you're not getting something out of it. That colour of beer looks badass, James. Whatever you were on there.
Did you bring out a triple?
No, it looks like a.
No, it's called Cran Raz. We brewed it last year. It's a 5.5 Goza. We rebrewed it. Packaged it about 2 weeks ago, and it's cranberry, raspberry, Indian coriander seeds, and sea salt that we bought from Blackthorn. They're a kind of guy down in Ayrshire that have this. I don't know if you've seen it. They've got this massive, big wooden rack where they take this Blackthorn hedge, and they take the branches, and then they pipe seawater through it, and as the sun dries the seawater, it creates sea salt. It's absolutely fantastic. Kaylee and I went down last year for like a festival. I think it was last March. Beautiful, beautiful day, and you can walk right through this. It's probably 5-8 meters high. You can walk right through it, and they pipe this seawater up the top, and it dribbles down these branches. Really, they make a fantastic salt, but it's a wonderful setting for a business down in Ayrshire, and that's what this beer's kind of based on. It's got a nice dry finish for the sea salt.
It's probably that we kind of talk about that at this time, because the last time we had John James, only reason I mention it because you've lost two members of the team that were I've been there for a long time, and I feel like we should mention them. And like you said, your car and
three.
Oh, fuck, it is three now. And yeah, they've been a stalwart of Overtone for a long time, and obviously, I feel like it's a good position where we're at the moment of the conversation, just to go, like, yo, like you said, with Kaylee and stuff, and Kat and Karun and stuff, like, they were a big part of the team, and they were a big part of Overtone, and exciting times ahead as well with Overtone at the same time.
Yeah, I think there's a time for people to kind of move on, I guess. Yeah, it's something that the dynamics of us is difficult. I mean, our team has actually reduced in size in the last 12 months. The three people that we've lost. I think when I put a post up about Karan leaving, somebody, I can't remember who it was, messaged me straight away. I think it was Colin, actually, for Caledonian Craft. And he's like, I read that first line, I thought he was fucking dead. I put this picture up of Karan when Karan and I went down to Virgin, which was, again, just such a fantastic trip. We went out in the piss, actually, with the new Bristol lads the day after we spent in Virgin. And, it was a fantastic thing. Karan's... it's been wonderful to work with him, but he's become a mate of mine. Do you know what I mean? When you spend so much time with people, they just become friends. And the same with Kaylee. Like, Kaylee and I were lucky enough to do a bit of travelling together. We went over to Switzerland. We went over to Rotterdam to work that beer festival last year. And I'll miss them both. Robbie just, he's the logical journey from beer is into whiskey, and Kaylee joined Glenallachie. Extremely proud of what she's done. She's a new product development with Glenallachie now. Robbie's moving to William Grant's. Karan's moved to Otherworld. I'm sure you know that already. Handy for him. He's a 10-minute cycle from Otherworld. Like, he's been.
Do you find for you guys, it's not so much like obviously not a part of the team, but for you guys, like, almost being proud of one of them coming through Overtone and then like seeing themselves grow and then going, right, we're going to go to these other establishments, and it's not as in a like fuck you Overtone kind of moment, like as in Overtone is a building block for us that's built them into the careers that they've got, and they're going to move on to bigger, better things just because of what you guys have instilled in them.
I think you're talking about three highly intelligent, highly capable people. First of all, you can't think that people are gonna stick in it, and I don't mean to diss craft beer, but you can't imagine that people are gonna stick at craft beer. Don't get me wrong, if we were growing at a rate in aughts and the market was in a state of expansion, then maybe things would have been different. But you can't expect people who are, you know, becoming more intelligent and knowing the marketplace better and just general life stuff. You can't expect them to continually work for the same business for a lengthy period of time. And the three of them, Christ, we were out a couple of weeks ago for Karan and Robbie's leaving too, went through Edinburgh, and it was great fun. And it's really, really, really nice to, well, hopefully stay in contact with them. I think working for a business where you're given such autonomy, which you're given at Overtone, it does develop, like rapidly develop a skill set. And I think that the three guys that we're talking about, have been able to take that skill set and move on. So I wish them all the best. And hopefully
Is that something for you as well that keeps you going? Like everyone, anyone who listens to this podcast, who whatever day job they do, something like myself, like you'll have an eye at other things, but for yourself, those things that you mentioned about Overtone, are they the things that get you excited about what you guys are producing and growing? Because if we're being honest, what Overtone is, what, 4 years old, 5 years old, 5 years old?
Yeah, we'll be six in October.
Aye, near enough the same length of this podcast. it's very much in its infancy. But does that get you excited to like fucking with the beers that you guys are producing and with fanboys like me?
Is that number six?
Sorry, that's six.
From my perspective, like, yeah, it's super exciting to have these people working and producing the great products that we love to drink. But at the same time, when you think to yourself, yeah, these guys are moving on, who's going to be coming in?
Yeah.
Because that's what's exciting for me is, yeah, mm-hmm. you know, the beers are amazing and they're consistently amazing. So I don't think for a minute that the standards are going to slip. But how is a new brewer or a new person coming in, how are they going to add their own style or personality or their own skill set to the mix?
Yeah.
And how is that going to make the beer evolve? How is that going to make the products change? So that's what gets me excited about you know, people moving on. And you're 100% right in what you say. You know, you can't stay in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, particularly that style of personality of, you know, creativity and you know, wanting to develop and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, the thing that gets me excited is, you know, a new personality coming in and adding their own twist to an already great base.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to be honest, we've already got a new graphic designer in Steve. Steve's come over from Cork in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
He's dead on. He knows the business well. He's worked with breweries before. Robert, and for those who don't know, you know, it was Kayla. Kayla was a marketer, and she did everything with regards to marketing. Steve's come in and he's hit the ground running. You'll see he's changed a couple of things about our design of our cans. If you look at all the new stuff, you'll see a kind of a shift in how they look and the layout. Okay, I think that the brew teams remain the same, although we have like Dan and the guys have started basically experimenting with a few brewing techniques to hopefully increase yield. You know, if you can increase yield, then you'll increase profitability, and that's very, very important. And a few bits and bobs are changing with how we brew. So yeah.
Oh, honestly, nah, it's like you say, exciting times and all the rest of it. And so, what's your summer festival season looking like? Because realistically, I know you're usually quite a busy man on a Friday, Saturday when it comes to festival season.
Yeah, it starts in about 3 weeks. I'm over in. Well, we've got Hop City. I'm trying to think when that is. That's 16th, 17th, 18th of May.
Yep.
Week prior to that, I'm at NBCC. Obviously, I knew and signed up to NBCC before the Carlsberg thing happened. Distribution for Mikkola. But I'm hoping that won't be a massive one. I mean, NBCC is huge. Looking forward to that. Then we've got Bax Beer and Hop City in the same week, and then I think Eaglesham the week after. We'll still do Giffnock and West End Beer Festival. I need to probably speak about that. I'm sure you've heard it's back on this year. Connor and Jake are back at the helm, and from a Glasgow perspective, that's massive, you know.
It's a really good lineup this year as well, isn't it? You know, that's basically the West, like the West breweries are all in effect. The West brewery is not in effect, actually, but all the Western breweries are in effect. For those that I'm not going to touch that. But I think when I looked at the list, it was quite funny because I was like, you know, it was Overtone and STF and Duquette and to name a few. And then like Holy Goat. And then I was like, well, that's a bit of a left fielder, but that's going to be good.
Yeah, looking forward to that coming back. I think the usual ones, I mean, the Giffnock and Eaglesham will both be big this year. I think we're back abroad a couple of other times as well. But yeah, it's summer. It's just quite full on, and it will be this year, I think, as well.
It's coming thick and fast. I think the one thing with Overton and going to these festivals and stuff, they're probably, listeners of the podcast, you expect them at these massive We Are Beer events, but actually, if you look at it and you look at the social media pages, they're maybe the ones that you, I don't want to say you don't expect, but the ones that are actually more fun because they are more intimate. You get to spend time with, like, talking to the likes of James and stuff and getting to know the beers and get to know the people. When the Eaglesham one, Mark, you've been there the last 2 years.
Yeah.
That one is like fucking mental.
The first time I showed up to do the install and all the rest of it on the Friday or whatever, and we were one of the first people there, and I thought, there's no way they're having a festival here. You know, it was just like in the middle of the town and like a field. Well, it wasn't even a field, like a wee park sort of style. And then on the Saturday, it was like, you know, it was like 3,500 folk there or something. Honestly, it was as if, like, you know, a football stadium had piled out and people just parking on the grass, picnics, you know, there's food stalls. And there was just such a great lineup of beer, you know, in Scottish, you know, Scottish independent. Beer, independent breweries, basically, that were all represented. It was a wicked day. The last couple of times I've done it, it's been wicked, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And the Giffnock one at the rugby club's always a fun day as well. Right. If you get the weather, it's always a cracker, because it just, you know, there's a thing about rugby clubs and, you know, they get, you know, people knowing how to handle their drink, but it turns, I'm trying to think when it finished last year, I don't know if it was like 7 or 6 o'clock, but it was like an hour before, so call it 5, and the DJ just kind of ramped the tunes up, and it was all these like 90s dance tunes and all the rest of it, and the place was jumping, like absolutely jumping, and I just thought, I actually ended up leaving the boys that I was working with. I was like, you can man the bar. I'm away to dance to, you know, a few of these tunes and go and rave for, you know, 10 minutes.
Wakefield or something like that.
Pretty green eyes.
Pretty green eyes. And then the rain came on last year at the perfect time, because obviously it's like last drinks, and next thing the typical Scottish monsoon opened up, and it just kind of cooled everybody off, and you're like, right, class. Because when you are working, James, it is a, you know, it's a great day, but it can be pretty full on. You know, when you're blaring to plenty of people, you're pouring a gazillion pints or halves or two thirds or whatever it is.
Yeah,
You know, by the end of it, you're thinking, I quite fancy a couple of these myself. I'm looking forward to it. I don't know where I'm cropping around, but I always keep my eyes peeled for the Overton stall, so I always say hello when I'm floating around.
Yeah.
This is a question to the pair of you, James and Mark. Do you guys find that when you're at these festivals that are like more brewery orientated and not the kind of CBA events where there's like nobody gives a shit about the beer in terms of finding out more about the brewery, blah blah blah. Like, is it that full on from fucking the start to the absolute end, and you find yourself answering the same questions that you did at fucking 10 o'clock that you do at fucking 7 o'clock at night? Mark, you're laughing.
No, because I think you answer the same questions to begin with, and then I don't know how James feels, but it gets to a point in the day where people are just like, just give me, I want this, you know, I want whatever, because you've kind of went through, I'm pouring X or Y, and, you know, you've got a bit of spiel depending on the beer and whatever, but I think the longer the day goes on, I want to say the less people are interested in what you have to say and just want you to get it in the glass ASAP for them.
Joe, I agree with you, Mark. I think that at the start of the day, everyone is quite interested, and it's like, oh yes, and what's this DDH thing mean on your keg bars and your, like, double dry hot, and what does that mean? And by the end, you want somebody to speak to you sensibly, but all you can get is, and you're like, I can't serve you, mate. And, you know, it's a classic example of, there's a point in the night, and some people that run festivals get a little bit greedy and they extend the time of the festival, and they should really shut the doors at 7, but they extend it to 9. And then at 9 o'clock, all you're left with is people who shouldn't be drinking. And from a responsible drinking perspective, they shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They should be home. And you get people that are in jeopardy of falling over,
yep,
biting somebody, or being sick and hurting themselves. And I say this a lot, like, you know, if you're running a beer festival, shut your doors at an early day and let people who want to get more drunk be someone else's problem. Because if you want to have this big, big extended hours festival that lasts 8, 9, 10 hours, then people are going to get drunk because it's a Saturday or a Friday and it's party time. Mm-hmm. And we found that Dunfermline's really, really solid, but there was a couple of people right on the button on Saturday that were just, yeah, beyond the point of security should have just gently said, here's a glass of water, pal, have a seat.
Yeah.
You know, don't be hanging off a bar. And that's not disrespecting. Gone will probably watch this and be like, what the fuck, James? That is probably the best run festival that I do each year.
Yeah.
Colin has it on the button. He doesn't get greedy. It doesn't open. He could easily run that till 10 o'clock on a Saturday, but he chooses not to because you can't have people drinking that extended period of time. 6 hours is perfect. And I think I saw one or two people who were on the edge on Saturday. You go down to Nottingham, you go down to London, and you know, Brew London's mayhem. Absolute. See the second it ticks 7 o'clock, it is mayhem. Glasses are smashing all over the fucking place. There's 3,500 people there, and it just starts kicking off.
It's impossible to control that.
Oh, mental. Just reduce the hours. Yeah. Send people on their way, away up the road and sleep. Do you know what I mean? But yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I don't.
You're no wrong. Just no.
The thing is, these beers aren't, you know, when you're going to a craft beer festival, you're not selling, you know, 2% beers. There's a couple of, you know, there'll be a couple of low nose floating around, but for the most part, there's going to be session 4%ers, and then, you know, people tend to bring something a little exotic with them if it's the 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, whatever it is. And I know it. In Dunfermline over the weekend, there was a couple of mid-teen beers floating around, you know, which is
proper
fucking 16, was it? No,
the track barrel age thing was about 15 or 16%. But even then, they would only sell you that in a 50ml measure, you know. You know, which was incredibly responsible. And you know, I think the majority of the people that are going are folk like us that are, you know, aficionados. And you know, I think I've had maybe one or two festival experiences where I went a bit ham at the start and regretted it. Whereas now, anytime I go to a festival, it's just give me a third. All I'm wanting to do is taste the beer and savour it, think about it, and then move on to the next one. That's the objective.
I think genuinely the big swally over the last couple of years has been one of the beer festivals. It's been phenomenal and been really consistent. And they're obviously clearly. I know. Going to the bigger, better things to the point where they're doubling up this year,
we're going down to Edinburgh in October.
Which is amazing.
Are you going to be going there, James, to the one in Edinburgh?
Yeah. When Colin emailed me, it was an easy decision. I'm not sure how it'll work. I think their capacity is up to 1,000 at the Corn Exchange, so it'll be a different festival. Obviously, I think it's two Saturday sessions rather than the Friday session. It'll be great, and we'll do it. It's nice of they've worked with Oak City, obviously, to launch it. I think the plan are maybe to do one in Glasgow. I think that Colin had kind of, hope I'm not fucking stepping out of turn here, but he'd kind of spoke to me about if he does one in Glasgow, that he would be the collaborating brewery.
Do you know, James, that since We Are Beer fucked off, there's a space there, like there's a want for a reasonably sized craft beer festival to be in Glasgow. Like, I know we've got them, but for one, I think we, the big Swally, there's a fucking opportunity there for them to take that space that We Are Beer have left, because they're, I'm not going to finish that sentence.
Yeah, well, we used to have Beer Makes Glasgow, didn't we? That was at Drygate, and it was a blast, but it was never really that good. Like, sorry, I'm going to rephrase that. It was great because all the brewers got together and we all got hammered and it was great fun, but nobody really, like, commercially speaking, it was a fucking, it was a waste of time. Yeah. It was great fun and we all had a ball, but, like, nobody got a ton. There was too many brewers in such a small space that it didn't work, and so it didn't work and it stopped. There needs to be something on the scale of the Big Swally Edinburgh. What's it called? Is it called the Big Swally Edinburgh?
I think so.
You know, so if they can get a site with 1,000 capacity in Glasgow, if Colin can do it, we'll obviously assist. I think you're right. I think there is a market for it. I think we're missing it. West End Beer Festival will be fantastic this year. I'm sure Jake and Connor will absolutely fucking kill it, to be honest.
100%
they both know what they're doing, and I've already said to Jake that I'll assist him with anything that he needs. You're right that there's definitely a void there for Glasgow, and I think when you look at the timing of when these festivals come, you know, the Big Swally Edinburgh is October. We're going to have a birthday party probably end of September, start of October. Obviously, it won't coincide with the Big Swally Edinburgh. And it'll be a low-key affair, probably at the Civic House. I think I had a meeting last week regarding it. So we'll do that again. There's definitely space for a big one.
You know, flights booked, Gav.
Yeah. I've just been for my annual leave.
There's so many good breweries, and it's nice to see breweries get involved with these festivals, because and when the organisers are taking the kind of getting the breweries involved with it as well, because like you say, festivals need to be commercially viable for breweries to show up. They're not just, you know, breweries of, you know, Overtone size, and hopefully I'm not, but like, you know, you don't have a huge marketing budget that you then say, right, we're going to sploosh 100x this money on a, you know, going to all these festivals, and we can write it off as a, because it's part of marketing and the kegs that we produce, and that, you know, that we maybe don't sell or whatever, that come out our actual saleable sort of stock, just don't get written off as marketing budget, you know, stuff. You know, it is, at the end of the day, you know, if whether you're at a festival that is, you're paying for beer when you're there, or if it's a festival that has beer already built into your ticket price, you know, which is a totally different model, and we've spoke about it a couple of times, it still needs to be viable for the actual breweries to go, because like you say, they're paying you for your weekends and, you know, your time and all the rest of it, and travel and distribution and getting the beer there, and, you know, getting the lenders there and setting up, and you know, it's not just, well, the festival starts at 12 o'clock on Saturday, so, you know, James rocks up at 12 o'clock on Saturday, that would be ideal. You know, there's planning involved behind it, there's getting beer there, there's set up, you know, it's not so, at, you know, when it comes to Monday morning and you think to yourself, right, how did we do over the weekend, you know, you're hoping, you're saying, right, well, you know, at least we've covered costs, but you know, if we've made a couple of bucks at the end of it, then that's a Brucey bonus, basically.
Yeah, it's a total tough one, that. I'm a spreadsheet guy, and I look at what we did, and we actually pulled out a beer festival that we'd signed up to do this year, because I looked at last year and we didn't break even, or if we did, we were that close to not breaking even. As in, that close, we were just like, right, do we work a 6-day week that week, work a 50 to 55-hour week that week, pay yourself some cash in hand. Get up your Saturday, so you, the time that you spend with your loved ones and that, because you're working a beer festival that is based on greed. Let's face facts. The reason why these festivals fail is because the organisers get greedy.
Mm-hmm.
They add more breweries. They'll try and create some kind of USP that doesn't fucking work. And then what happens is the brewers don't get a ton. And the brewers are the, should be the reason why people are coming to the festival in the first place. You know, you can try and put on bands and you know, make the food offering and what have you. But ultimately, if you don't get that part right, then, and so many of them just do it. They do it once and they don't do it again because they fuck it up the first time so badly. And it's a constant. Karan and I used to discuss this regularly about just how many festivals that we go to that we'll just never ever do again.
Bingo.
And it's unfortunate because it should be a simple kind of mathematics. It should be really, really straightforward.
Yeah.
How many breweries? How many tickets? Bosh. Do the breweries get a ton? Yeah. Colin's got it on the button. Like you see, Caledonian Craft, he's got it on the button. He knows it. He understands exactly what the breweries need. He doesn't get greedy with making money for himself. Like it's never been Colin's motive, and all the breweries turn up to the Big Swally. They do well.
That's the one thing from Callum and Scott from you guys going the last 2 years. It's the vibe that I get from the feedback that you guys have come back with. It's a very well balanced kind of beer festival that looks after both the consumer and also the breweries that are taking part in the festival as well, which is good to see.
If anybody can scale it up to a bigger venue, then I'm sure Colin's going to hit definitely.
It doesn't mean there needs to be double the amount of breweries though.
No,
it just means that it's double the amount of people. Mm-hmm. You know, because
that whole vibe at the Big Swally, we've never been on the Saturday, but it's always been the Friday night that we've went. Yeah. But you're never waiting ages and ages to get to a bar. Mm-hmm. The breweries are never so busy that they can't spend a couple of minutes talking to you. It's not so busy that you feel like you're a sardine. Everything all blends in together to make the whole experience worthwhile and make you want to go back again. So hopefully scaling it up to the Corn Exchange in Edinburgh, maintains that vibe. And I'm sure it will. I'm sure it will.
I'm sure they'll make that work. The other thing that works is the Overtone website as well and the shop.
Fuck's sake.
That fucking worked, by the way. That shit works. James,
there's a picture of Gav in this website as the most frequent. It might never buy anything, but his IP address always shows up just so he can check out what's going on.
Oh, fucking hell. James, for listeners of the podcast who are not a craft beer apologist or an Overtone apologist, to be more specific, like myself, where is the best place they can grab Overtone beer?
Where?
Yes.
On trade or off trade? I mean, obviously, if you're buying online, then
listeners. We've got a wide mix of listeners. We've got on trade.
I said that last week too, didn't I? It was the first thing. Mm-hmm. Where can you get it? And I was like, well, you come to me if it's on trade. Like, I want to sell you kegs. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, well, exactly. If it's on trade and you want to buy, then james@overtonebrewing.com. Give us an email. But you know, if you're buying for beers for your own fridge, then go to the website. Notwithstanding, there's a huge amount of bottle shops and pubs that stock our stuff, and you know, if we don't support them, then they disappear. We've seen it over the last couple of years. Like, there's been a lot of places that have come through and done well, and then they've disappeared because people haven't supported them. Mm-hmm. It's very, very important to support local. You know, if you look at Glasgow geographically, you look at the south, and you know, Cool Ship, Wee Beer Shop, Philly's, the Bell Jar, I'm sure there's loads of other places on the south side. Mm-hmm. Made from Grapes, they all stock their stuff. You look at the West and, you know, Innocent Gun. I mean, do you think they'd be more represented? Naked Soup, like, it's soup and a sandwich, but they also serve Overtone on draft. Wonderful Place of Doublet in Deep. Shilling in the city centre. Innocent Gun Pub support us, thankfully. Obviously, the place in Leith is shut, but Lothian Road and Ashton Lane are both doing well.
I'll give you a funny story, James. Right, so people who live in the south coast of England, if you're looking for Overtone beer, if you're the Brighton area, I'll give you a couple of places that are easy. Bottle and Jug, Beerorama, another place inside Brighton, which sadly is no longer, they've shut down this bar and they've moved it. But I was there 2 weeks before the shutdown and they had Ouija. Ouija on tap.
It was Big Ouija.
They weren't calling it Ouija, but were they?
No, I know. That's where the fucking story's going to melt. they were calling it Big Wedgie. I walked in, I was like, I'll have a pint Overtone. And the boy was like, Big Wedgie? Sorry, Big Wedgie? I was like, sorry, what? Big Wedgie? I was like, no, try again. Try Big Wedgie. I was like, I'm having Big Wedgie, no Big Wedgie.
That's funny.
But
we didn't have a pint of it.
Oh, fuck, I did.
Jesus.
It's fucking, here, I don't get Overtone stuff a lot of the time, sadly, down south. When I see it, I'm like, yes, I'll have all of it. But to the point where Bottle and Jug through in Worthen, they had four cans of what was it? The Big Yin. Four cans of the Big Yin left. I was like, I'll just take them. All four of them left. He's like, I was like, what you got behind? Is it? I've just got those four. I'll take them all. I'll buy them all. Yes.
Honestly, we're gonna have to get a picture of you on the website, Gav. The Overtone fanboy fan page or something like that. You know what I mean? Surely that can be an add-on to the website, James.
Yeah, totally.
It feels like a
kind of Big Yin.
With a big wedgie.
With a big wedgie, exactly. Head over to unbrewing.com, head at the website, get some of the best craft beer you'll taste in your fucking life. Flux is there, the CCBM is there, like the guys mentioned, Obsidian is there as well. Get yourself over to the website, get yourself some of the cracking beers. Some, I love the merchandise as well. There's a lovely birthday glassware as well as on the website, which I just so happen to have in my basket, ready to rock and roll. A fifth year birthday glass as well. So get over there, overtonebrewing.com, where you can grab some of the freshest of Overtone beers. I would normally say my pad has run out of questions, but because I've got an away pod, I don't have my pad. So I'm assuming...
You're just quite happy talking about
questions.
Roger. You're still at the same point I'm at. Roger that. Hey, head over to the website, overtonebrewing.com. Get yourself some fresh beer. While you're at it as well, make sure you head over to all their social media pages, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Search Overtone, like, follow, and share all their content. While you're there as well, why not look for the Beer Fresh Podcast? Full-blown rebrand of the Beer Fresh Podcast. Looking fresh and so clean as the Beer Fresh Podcast. You can show your support by... Never do that again, Mark. giving us a 5-star rating. You can also show your support by going to patreon.com/beerfridgepodcast. If you watch on YouTube, like, follow, and share. And until next time, from myself, Gavin, Callum, and Mark, and from James as well, cheery bye.
Totally. Yes. Good night.
One, two.